This is The Coaching Inn, a podcast from 3D Coaching. So welcome to The Coaching Inn, 3D's virtual pub. I'm Claire Pedrick, and today my companion is Coach Nikki Chambers. Welcome.
Hello. Nice to see you.
And you. So Nikki emailed info@3dcoaching.com with some lovely feedback. Thank you. And a question. What are your thoughts on sensing and on intuition? So I said, come to The Coaching Inn and let's talk. Yeah. So, Nikki, welcome to my pub.
Thank you very much. I quite like being in a pub at 9 o'clock on a Friday morning. It's great. Yeah.
So tell us a bit about yourself and about your question.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm a coach. I've been coaching for a long old time. I'm a coach mentor, which I love doing. I love mentoring coaches to get their credentials. I work with all kinds of people, all levels of seniority. And it's really about coaching people to have impact, I suppose, if I'm going to bring it down. And I love my work. I really love it. I love people and their potential. And even before I was coaching, which is a very, very, very long time ago, actually, I was always coaching. I just wasn't trained in it at that point. And it's always been about people and their potential.
That's amazing. I was always coaching too.
Yeah.
Then you think, oh, is that what I was doing? That's interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what people keep asking me. Oh, okay. That must be what I'm doing.
Yeah, because the word isn't the thing that does it, is it? It's the supporting people to get to their potential.
Yeah.
Wow. So tell us more about your question.
So, yes, the question about intuition and sensing. In fact, I wrote it out here. Well, I come from quite a creative background, so I always write things out or draw things out. And I wrote three things: sensing, intuition, vibrational listening. Because after listening to your fantastic, oh my God, Claire, really fantastic piece about about what you'd written about in your book about kind of simplifying coaching, and also like seeing your work over the years, and that lovely thing that you say about coaching being ums and ahs, and you know, and kind of get it staying out of the way, and the simplicity of it really, and also the thing about like the journey to mastery, and as you move towards that, it gets simpler and simpler and simpler, because the journey is the clients or the thinkers or the other person. It's not ours as the coach, and so actually we don't need to get in their way, and it is really simple. It's their stuff. We don't need to understand, we just need to partner with them and be by their side, which is what I love about coaching. And there's a whole other thing that happens, the intuition and the sensing part, when you're listening at that vibrational level. And I just wondered what you thought about that, and what you thought about bringing that into the room and offering that and keeping it clean, keeping it that it's their agenda and that it's over there, and that us as coaches, even though it's our intuition and our sensing and our feeling, that not getting in the way of their thinking and their journey, because that's the best stuff that they can do.
That's such a great question, because even at beginner level, I think that great questions come from what we see or hear or sense. So that sensing is arriving right in the beginning, but it takes a journey of years, doesn't it, to recognize the sensing bit? Because I think early on, coaches are so worried about all the things they're doing that noticing the sensing for many people is a bit tricky.
Yeah.
I think always for me, the big question is, how do you make this partnership? You know, and sensing and intuition can turn accidentally, I think, into power by mistake, in that I think I know something you don't yet know. I might form a hypothesis and then I might test that out. Now, that's not partnership.
No.
I originally heard this quote attributed to Jung, but apparently it's, I've now discovered it's attributed to a psychotherapist called Nigel Wellings. And he said, never know first, never know better, and never think you know. Never know first, never know better, never think you know. So the question is, what on earth do you do with it?
Yeah, I was just thinking, okay, all right. So especially that bit about think you know. Because we're humans, and our brain is not very good when it doesn't know. And so always kind of tries to fill in the gaps, whether we're either trying not to or whether we are really genuinely there in partnership next door to and with the people that we're working with. I don't know. I think as I'm saying that, I'm kind of answering my own question.
What's the answer?
It always comes back to the same thing. It's about being with.
Yeah.
That being with, if you're really being with them, then you don't need to know. Your brain doesn't, because you're just being with them, nothing more. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that the sensing comes from them. And if it comes from me, then it's mine. But it's probably something I'm picking up in the ether, as it were. Mm. And not everybody is strong on that. Some people are strong on something else. But I think intuition is something that we pick up in the kind of space in between, almost. Yeah. I think if we kind of just nail the risk and then go back to what you were just saying. So the risk is, when we offer something, often people think we're offering advice, even if what we offer is theirs. So, for example, somebody says, I don't think this is the right job for me. Hmm. And the coach does a really good piece of reflective listening and reflects that back and says, you don't think this is the right job for you. At that moment, the thinker thinks that that is the coach's wise words. If they didn't hear themselves say it the first time, they will be thinking that that came from the coach and not from them. Mm. So being clear where data that we're bringing into the room is coming from is absolutely fundamental to great coaching, because people in other conversations, that is wisdom that comes from the person who we think has more power than us. And in coaching, we're offering back their stuff. So the skill is to find a way of offering sensing or intuition in a way that it's not ours. Mm. Because if it's ours, well, actually, it's not if it's ours. If they think it's ours, that imbalances the partnership. Mm. Because they start giving the power to us. So it's a really interesting, precarious balance of how do we keep in this dance. T.S. Eliot calls it, he says in Burnt Norton, in the Four Quartets, he says at the still point of the turning world, something else that I can't remember, and then he says neither from nor towards. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, it is really beautiful.
So So how do we deal with sensing and intuition in a way that's neither from backing off nor towards moving too far in? And that's, I think, the real question about how to use it well.
And I think there's a question around sensing, what sensing is and what intuition is, because they're, and then the kind of vibrational listening, which is what you spoke about, that when you're really listening at that level, kind of whatever we could, there's loads of, you know, people call it loads of different things, don't they? Global listening or level three listening or vibrational listening. But it's that being with listening, for me, I suppose. But that's when you're listening at that level, that's when the sensing and or the intuition can come in. And then there's the, what you were saying about kind of how we offer it, how that comes into the room and what we do with and about that.
I love the way you describe vibrational listening, because it's like you can feel the So that's really sensing, isn't it? That's actually deep sensing, where you get the, and that's about the music, I think, of the conversation. So I'm doing quite a lot of thinking and processing at the moment around the music of coaching, because I think that that's one of the real facets of mastery. It's about tone and timing and the musicality. And I'm doing this amazing work in Russia, where I have to watch Russian coaches coaching in Russian.
Oh, God, that sounds amazing.
It's totally amazing, because I have to watch the recordings and I don't understand a thing.
Oh, how totally wonderful. What a lovely thing to be doing.
It is absolutely fantastic, because I can't give them any feedback on their questions. I haven't got a clue. No idea.
No.
And their music is different from our music, because Russians' words tend to be, to describe something in Russian is about twice as long as describe it in English. So when I'm working with English coaches, I say, you know, really short works. I know that in Russia, the musical notes are going to be longer because their words are longer than ours. But the learning about the dance of coaching and the music of coaching is just, it's like the best learning lab in the world. It's totally phenomenal.
God, what a total joy to be able to do that.
So I would actually, that makes me think, you know, see if you can find a video of somebody coaching in a language you don't understand and watch it, because that could be some really great way to kind of sense check this learning.
Well, I wonder if actually the thing to do would be to not watch, but to just listen.
Yeah.
So, you know, like video off, because there's so much in that, the layers of listening. I mean it takes me back to years ago. I used to have to do a lot of, when I'd really kind of only started doing it kind of properly, doing loads and loads and loads of phone coaching, and the level of listening that you have to immediately go to is incredible with that. And then there were other ways of coaching that I did, that I used to kind of take into these executive spaces, and all of these executive coaches go, oh, you can't do that. I mean, you how can you do that? You can only do it face to face. And I go, but you can do it with a WhatsApp. It was meeting the clients where they were, and it was WhatsApp messaging coaching. God, you have to listen at a really, really extraordinary level when you do that. But actually to kind of to listen to someone in doing it in a different language without seeing them would be such an extraordinary lovely thing to do,
because you have to listen to the whole music, and it's the tone, isn't it? It's the tone. And it's not about a particular tone at different parts of the conversation, but it's about a particular tone for that particular person. Because you can hear when somebody's getting insights because the tone of their music changes. So if you listen to a conversation from beginning to end, often the tone will change at the moment of transformation, and it suddenly starts to sound different. And in terms of sensing and intuition, I think that another thing that we need to kind of think about is sensing and intuition is only useful at the moment it's useful for the thinker, because we can't make meaning for them. They can only make meaning for themselves. So the question is, when is the right time for them to pick that up, when it's going to serve them to make meaning, and when isn't?
And just picking up on what you said prior to that about listening for when things happen, or sensing when things happen, watching for when things happen, there's also something about the space in between and how that is so much part of that dance, and the listening and the music. It's so lovely that you call it that, the music of the journey or what's happening. And then to your point about when it's useful to them, it's only useful when it's useful to them. That's a really interesting point, because there's no, as either the thinker or the coach or the system, there's no, you know, if you are really listening at that and being with and listening at that level, at that kind of musical level, you can't tell. There's no control over those things. There's no control over when those things will happen or appear if you're really with it. So, and there's no control over for the thinker or for the coach. So, yeah, so how then to make it, or not to, to make it, how then for it to be useful in the moment that it's useful for them?
Apparently in the podcast with Tunde Erdos the other day, I said, which I didn't know, somebody told me yesterday, did you know you said this? I went, no, I didn't. But I said something about, you know, mastery is about not being in control, but also not being out of control. And that's, that connects to what you just said about the space in between, isn't it? I'm so loving John and Johannes on the UK Strictly Come Dancing. Are you watching that?
Oh, the connection. Listening at a, there's like listening at that level, that whole kind of, without words, the sensing thing.
Do you know the really interesting thing about that? So for the listeners not in the UK or who are not addicted to Strictly Come Dancing like Nikki and I clearly are, it's where a celebrity dancer is taught to dance by a professional. And they start off not being very good, don't they, most of them? Although in this series, they started out all being brilliant. But one of the couples is two men. But Nikki, you know, the thing that I've got a little note, it's a repeating task and it comes up on Fridays, and it's just come up and it says, think about John and Johannes, who are these two male dancers. And the reason is, in coaching, the coach mustn't be bigger than the thinker. And we both need to play our part in partnership. And the thing that's really struck me about this dancing thing that we're watching on Saturday nights is that these two men are the same size. So in most dancing, even though it is partnership and we talk about coaching as being the dance, in traditional dancing, usually the man is bigger than the woman. Uh-huh. But in the with these two, they're both the same size and the dancing is the same, and yet it's really different, isn't it?
Mm.
So there's a thing.
So when so Claire, when that thing pops up then and it says think about them, what do you think about?
Well, there's going to be a blog post, but I haven't quite got it yet. I know it's there and it's kind of coming.
Yeah.
That's how I write my blogs. I see something and I think, oh, that's something that's going to give some insight. But sometimes I get the insight first. And sometimes I just know, I'm sure there's an insight there. It'll emerge. So I look at my repeating task. And if I get the insight, then I write the blog. And if I don't get the insight, then I just tell it to come back next Friday.
What insight has it given you so far?
That's a very good coaching question, Nikki. It is about them both being the same size. But I think, and there's also something about they swap the leading. So they did a dance the other day. So last week, John led, but in a previous week, they were swapping the leading between them through the dance. Mm. And that is the best metaphor I've ever seen of coaching live. So the great delight, if you want to see this, listeners, you can go to YouTube and type John and Johannes Strictly Come Dancing 2021 and you can watch it. But I want to go back and re-watch that video of the two of them dancing when they swap the lead. And there's also a video on a TED talk on YouTube called Liquid Leadership.
Oh, okay.
Which is two professional dancers talking about swapping the lead. And there are three of them in the TED talk. There's two men and a woman. So the two men dance and swap the lead, and then one of the men dances with the woman and they swap the lead. And you can't see when they're doing it. It's really interesting. And of course, that's what brilliant coaching is, when you can't see, and we've got this space between when we're just seamlessly moving around the conversation in a kind of productive, insightful, moving forward way.
Mm. Aren't those lovely words, insightful, moving forward way? How beautifully that describes coaching.
I didn't know that, but I do know. It's fascinating.
Well, for me, I should have added for me.
Yeah. So how are we doing on sensing and intuition, Nikki?
And that's a really good coaching question. I love the words around it, the kind of dancing and the music and I'm being very visual. The image of either watching or listening to those Russian coaches and just, I don't know, kind of it's like sensing what's going on. There's something that's really powerful about that.
Mm.
Really powerful about that. And I suppose I've still got a couple of questions. One is about the difference between the sensing and the intuition. And then the other one is that thing that you said about it being useful only when it's useful to the thinker. And the thing that's really important for me about that is about that power dynamic and that not being in the room, and that it's a like when you were just talking about the liquid leadership, about it being the we, and I'm doing this with my hands, which I know people can't see, but it's like kind of making a globe. The I is left out of the room, and it being about the we. So yeah, I think in a long and roundabout way, it's those, I've still got those two questions, the difference between sensing and intuition, and how that is, because it's very different for me, I suppose.
Yeah.
And also, the it being in the room when it's useful to the thinker.
So what's the difference for you?
So the sensing, I suppose, has got two levels to it. One is about that listening and all of the stuff that we've already spoken about, are kind of the vibrational listening, the music, the it's almost like that's unseen silver thread that is between me and you, that moves, that comes in and goes out, moves backwards and forwards. And then it can, in a coaching session, be a feeling. So for example, I was in a coaching session with someone the other day, and I asked if I got a kind of a feeling of a really tight knot in my chest. And I asked if, I just said, oh, I've got a bit of a sense from what you're talking about. Is it all right if I share that with you? And the person said, yeah. And I said, oh, it feels like I've got a kind of bit of a tight knot in my chest. And they went, oh my God, yes. So have I. And then it kind of opened up a whole other conversation. And then that went down there.
So that was theirs. You felt their thing in your body.
Mm. And still, to your point about it's offering it when it's useful to them, I offered it in the room. I mean, and of course, it all is that the stuff about in the system, you know, it's in the system and it's... And it's listening at that somatic level and all of those kinds of things. And I offered it when I'd got no idea that it was useful to them at that moment in time. So there's still that question about offering it when it's only useful to them when it's useful to, you know, useful to them.
What did you just say?
It's only useful to them when it's useful to them.
No, just before that, you said, I offered it. And that's the secret.
Mm.
We need to offer. It needs to be short and we need to move on if it's not useful.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the kind of no attachment thing. I keep having conversations with people at the moment about no attachment. In let's, like, you know, inside and outside the coaching space.
But it's got to sound
very freeing thing.
Yeah, but you've got to sound there's one thing not being attached and offering it, but it's got to sound to them as though it's an offer. So it's got to leave your mouth as an offer, and it's got to arrive in their body and their ears and their sensing as an offer that they can dismiss or take as they choose. But I would say short is the other real skill in that, so that if it's not useful, you just move on.
Mm.
And yes. I think that's about dissonance and resonance, which goes back to the music thing, because I think sometimes it's about whether the thing you're sensing is unusual and not what you'd expect to be sensing at this time of day in this place with this kind of person, something that hasn't happened before. So, for example, if you suddenly have a headache, right bang in the middle of a session, and there's no reason for you to have a headache and it just suddenly comes on, and it's not the kind of headache you've had before, it may be that you're picking something up from them.
And that goes back to that listening, you know, the kind of layers of listening and level of listening.
Yeah. I was listening to a recording yesterday with a coach, and the person who was thinking was coughing. Now, I love mental coaching and I love listening to recordings with people because I haven't got to do anything.
So do I. And you can listen at that fantastic, oh God, I love it, that fantastic level.
Anyway, and I think actually, for me, that's where I do my best learning that I then take back into the coaching space. So, you know, somebody put on LinkedIn this morning, oh, thank you so much for being my mentor. And I want to go, well, I learned as much as you did. And then I put it in my blogs and then everybody learns it. So I mean, it's all great, isn't it? But well, I've lost myself. So it's about it being short and being willing to be wrong. But this person was coughing. And when I was noticing, what I noticed in the first 10 minutes was that they really weren't coughing. And then they were coughing a lot. And then they really weren't coughing, and then they were coughing a lot. And that was dissonant for me, because if it had been that they'd had a cough, you'd have probably, it would have been a bit random. So in the chat box, which is how I listen with the person I'm mentoring so that we can both notice at the same time. And in the chat box, I just put, I wonder what the cough is. And what we noticed, and I fess up, if I'd been the coach, I probably wouldn't have noticed this, but but the cough came every time the rubber hit the road, every time the conversation got to actually, what am I going to do about this, rather than let me just think about this, then the coughing started. So if I'd been the coach, which I probably wouldn't have noticed, but if I had noticed and I'd been the coach, I would have just said, so what's the cough about? So very short. And then they go, actually, I've had this COVID cough for 6 weeks, and dismiss it. But that would have opened up the opportunity to say, I noticed that it happens when blah, blah, question mark. But it's about its offer, and it's short, and it's being willing to be wrong and move on. Even if it wasn't wrong.
Well, I think being wrong sometimes is a really useful thing as well. Because it almost, if it's offered with no attachment and it's wrong, it almost sometimes gives the thinker something to go, actually, no, it's not that, but it is this.
Yeah, exactly. And you can always offer again later if it comes back again, the thing that you noticed or sensed. And when you offer it the second time, you can just say, so if it had been in that situation, you could have said, 20 minutes later, if it came up again, and the cough, that's all you need to say. And then again, if it's not timely or if it's not useful, you leave it. And if it is useful, but of course, if you then find two sessions down the line that exactly the same thing's happening, then I would be a bit more challenging. So I wonder what's going on here. Because what I notice is this, and we might go a bit more into depth with it. But yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. And it makes me think of two things. One is, it makes me think of a few things, Chris. the noticing and being willing to and open to, and it all comes back to the listening thing at that level, at that kind of really, really global, holistic, whatever you call it, level. Yeah, and just noticing. And then I think, and it's what I've heard you say in the past as well, and it makes me think of in the mentor coaching space about as you move forward, as you know, one moves forward in the coaching in experience of being a coach and towards maturity, mastery, whatever you want to call it, that our questions get even more rubbish.
They do.
I love that. And I said that recently in a group mentor coaching setting, and and all the coaches just really laughed about it. But it's so true, isn't it? There's, you know, like when you first start out, that whole thing about power questions and la la la, all of that kind of stuff. And then actually, because it does come down to that kind of sensing or noticing or just what's in the room, or that sometimes you only have to say two words. And so if anyone listening from the outside was kind of wondering what coaching was all about, and they have the questions, then you know, they might think that there's not very much in it, really.
It just makes me laugh, because of course that's the journey, isn't it, through the coach. So when people start out in coaching, their questions are eloquent, and they are beautifully formed and they are thought out. But thinking them out and forming them beautifully means that there's a time delay between what was seen or heard or sensed and when it goes back to the thinker to actually pick it up. And that time delay takes them off course. So the master coach just offers, half a word. and never grammar. I always say, if that question was reusable, it's probably not a great question, unless it's a process question. So where are we? Is this useful? How are we getting on? Those questions, of course, are reusable. But if it's a tell me what your values are, that's probably never reusable in that form, because it's all to do with the moment. It's funny, because when I do training or when I do a group stuff, somebody will ask a really amazing question and you can see everyone else writing it down. And I go, look, don't bother, because there is never going to be a context where you can ask that question. Because that was totally based on what they saw or heard or sensed in that moment with that person in that space. And the likelihood of it being usable again is about one in a million. So don't bother, you know, just don't write it down. Please don't write it down.
Well, it's something came up the other day in the same group session that I was talking about, and one of the coaches said, oh, and I've got my list of questions that I have on my wall, and I said, right, chuck it out, get it, like,
put it, yes,
in the bin. And actually, if I really hold my hands up and I'm really honest, you know, all those years ago, that was me, and I totally admitted that, and I said, you know, look, I get it. It's like hanging our hats on a hook, the safety of it, you know, the safety of that. And I totally get it, and get rid of it and trust. And we have lots of conversation about trusting yourself as a coach, trusting yourself in the moment, trusting your client or your thinker, you know, and that whole thing about being with. And it also makes me think, I think one of the first times that I ever heard about you, Claire, was a really lovely coach that I know. And this is obviously before you wrote your book, said, oh, there's this really fantastic coach, and she's called Claire Pedrick. And somebody asked her if she'd write a book. And she said, but what would I fill a book with? Because it would just be full of ums and ahs. And I was like, yeah,
that's the book I didn't ever write. So about 15 years ago, I had this great title for a book, and it was going to be called The Art of Powerful Questions. And it was going to be 128 pages of great questions. My goodness, I'm glad I didn't write it. And I only didn't write it because I didn't have time. But you'd want to kind of find some kind of psychic way of nuking all the copies around the world, because you want to go, no, I don't want that to be please, please. And it was going to be amazing. And people were going to be coaching and they were going to be thinking, oh, I'm sure Claire Pedrick had a great question on page 38. Now, what F was it? But as soon as that happens, you're not listening, are you?
I thought you were going to say that it was going to be 128 pages full of ums and ahs.
Well, no, it would be now. It would be now. And it's all about, but it's all about the uplift, the offering. Rather than yes or okay. But that's for another day, probably. Can I offer one other thing about intuition?
Oh, yes, please.
And then it'd be great, wouldn't it, to work out what we've both learned from this conversation or what we are learning. I think that intuition comes from inside of us and outside of us and doesn't come from the space in between. So that would be what I would describe as the difference between sensing and intuition. So sensing, so if you were watching me coaching or I was watching you coaching or we were watching somebody else coaching, if it's sensing, somebody else might sense the same thing. It's not impossible that somebody else would sense the same thing. Does that make sense? But I think intuition is that random thing that comes, that flies in from somewhere. And, you know, people call it different things. Some people call it discernment. Some people call it intuition. Some people call it something else. And it probably doesn't come from the space between us. So I say what I see and I'll say, do you know, as you're talking, a random word has come into my head and it's this question mark. And see what happens. But I don't ask it as a question, because if I turn it into a question, they'll answer it. So I offer it, and if it's useful, they'll turn it into their own question. But if it's not useful, we'll drop and move on. But it get other. Otherwise, what happens is you have it. If you are an intuitive person, you have the intuition and then it's like a balloon growing inside your head. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And you lose the plot on your vibrational listening and all those other great things, because all you're going is, but I'm wondering whether this.
Yeah.
So get it out there in the same way. As if you, in coaching, you can't stop thinking about the fact you haven't got any milk. You need to get that out there and put it on a post-it quickly so that you stop thinking about the fact you've got no milk or nothing for dinner. You need to get that out quickly. With intuition, I think we also need to get it out quickly, but we need to get it out clean, short, offer. And if we really sense that this isn't the time, then we need to put it down so that it doesn't keep growing in our heads so that it gets in the way.
I love that metaphor of the kind of balloon growing, because as the balloon grows, there's less space for anything yet, or that, you know, fills up the space, doesn't it? For me, the intuition thing is almost like it's like a thing that comes up from, you know, it's like from my feet upwards, or from my kind of, it's like from a very kind of deep female wisdom upwards, but that's in my book, that's not in anyone else's book, but it's an older, wiser, different place.
So you have a filter that gives you a bit of a steer on whether this is intuition or sensing then?
Yes, and I think going to your thing about what, you know, what we've learned, I might be preempting that, but it just makes me think of that actually the two different, you know, that I in my original question I said sensing and intuition, then in kind of brackets I said, but knowing that they're two different things. And I think actually this conversation has been really reassuring, because my sense of it is that's exactly what you just said, that thing of like it's a kind of it's in the sensing is in the room, and I'm doing my kind of world thing again with my, with my hands, which no one can see, which I'm really sorry for. And the intuition thing is, it's almost like it comes up from the center of the earth, you know. And I love your metaphor about, and it totally fills a space unless you put it out there in whatever way you need to put it out there, in a, you know, as a thing. This is here. So I feel really reassured that my sense of those things is not very off.
Yeah, and if it's completely off-piste, which sometimes it is, then I'll say, don't answer this if it's not useful. Mm. Offer it as a question. And it almost always is, but you know, sometimes we're wrong. So we need to make it safe for them to reject it. Mm. And I think that, and that's why offering is such an important thing. And that's why tone matters so much. And that comes back to what you said earlier about music.
Mm. And it really makes me think of like our job as coach mentors around that it being really these two things, the sensing and the intuition are a part of that trusting and a part of the moving towards maturity and, you know, feeling solid enough to get rid of you. Take your questions down off your wall.
Yeah. That's a great one. Take your questions down off your wall. I love that. So what's been your biggest insight, Nikki?
Well, apart from talking to you today, which has been really fun and wonderful, I'm going to go and watch the YouTube on liquid leadership, because that the dancing thing, which no words, and it's almost, and what I'm doing now really unhelpfully on a podcast again is kind of like holding my stomach, and there being this, it's an unspoken from the outside view intangible thing that happens in coaching. That is, you know, they move and you move and they move. It's the thing that I love about that total being with and partnership. And it reminds me of Argentinian tango, which is like you have to really listen at a deep level for that to happen.
And the thing about Argentinian tango is it's beautiful and it's weird. And that's probably a great definition of coaching, isn't it? It doesn't really make sense to anyone else.
Yeah, if you're looking in, then, you know, going back to that thing we were saying about like the shit, you might just say one or two words. It looks like, it does look a bit weird. Yeah. Like, what happened just there?
Yeah, wow. So my takeaway is isn't it lovely how talking to somebody else enables you to make your own meaning?
Yeah.
I think that bouncing off with you has made me clearer about the difference between sensing and intuition. So that's really useful. And I'm writing a chapter on partnership for my next book later today. And so much to think about. And I should be watching Strictly Come Dancing on YouTube, but I won't let myself do that for the whole day because I do need to write some words as well. So that's been absolutely fantastic, so thank you. And I'll put, for the benefit of our listeners, I'll put the links to the Liquid Leadership video on the program notes. And also for those of you who are going, well, what's mentor coaching or coach mentoring? Nikki, in a sentence, what is that? Mentor coaching.
Mentor coaching is about keeping you sharp, keeping your skills sharp as a coach and being the best that you can be.
Yeah. And your mentor coach will watch or listen with you to recordings of what really happens in the room, so that they deal with your observable data rather than supervision, which often deals with self-reported data.
Yeah.
So if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that, Nikki?
I'm on LinkedIn, Nikki Chambers. I'd love to hear from you. As you can hear, I love having a bit of a chat.
Me too. And thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. God, that is so lovely to spend time talking about this stuff with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's a real pleasure. Thank you so much. So everybody, if you have a question about an aspect of coaching where you'd like to dig deeper, let's talk at the Coaching Inn. So email us on info@3dcoaching.com, and thinking about this together out loud will help other people learn, and it will help us make our own meaning at the same time. So send us an email. Thank you, Nikki. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, please share the podcast with a friend who might also be interested. And if you'd like to become one of our regulars at the Coaching Inn, you can subscribe at Podbean or on iTunes. We look forward to meeting you on the next podcast.
You've been listening to The Coaching Inn. Find out more about us at www.3dcoaching.com.